The Phrygians were an ancient people who inhabited a large part of central and western Anatolia in modern-day Turkey. Gordian, the greatest of the Phrygian cities, commanded the large region, standing as a stronghold with a mighty citadel, imposing walls and great royal mounds. The Phrygian kingdom flourished from the early Iron Age around the 10th century BC until the 7th century, when it was conquered by the Lydians and later various succeeding powers. Subsequently, the Phrygians, through their rich culture, would come to influence neighboring peoples like the Lydians, the Greeks, and eventually the Romans. As we shall see, even today, there are still Phrygian elements present in modern popular culture. Although the Phrygians left hundreds of inscriptions indicating their literacy, they did not leave behind any records of their history. Therefore, the origin of the Phrygian people is shrouded in mystery. Settlements in the land that would later be known as Phrygia date back to the early Bronze Age around 2300 BC. These settlements were very small in size, and their inhabitants appeared to share cultural similarities with both the neighboring Azawa people and those inhabiting the Troad, as evidenced by the pottery found in the region. From the middle to the late Bronze Age period, most of this land was under Hittite control, indicated by burial practices and findings such as ceramics and Hittite seals. Subsequently, the Bronze Age collapse ensued, marked by a succession of earthquakes, droughts, soil erosions, and most notably, the invasion of the Sea Peoples, a large group of different tribes, into the Eastern Mediterranean. These events caused widespread chaos in the region, leading to the plundering and destruction or abandonment and dissolution of most major powers in the Near East, including the Hittites, with the exceptions of Egypt and Assyria. It was during that time, at the collapse of the Hittite kingdom in the 12th century BC, that most scholars believe the Phrygians arrived in Anatolia. The theory proposing that the Phrygians initially came from Europe and migrated into Anatolia during that period is supported by classical literary sources and, more significantly, by archaeological and linguistic evidence. Most ancient Greek and Roman scholars seem to agree that the Phrygians migrated from the southern Balkans and settled in central and western Anatolia. Herodotus records that according to Macedonian accounts, the Phrygians were once known as Brigus or Vrygus and lived as neighbors to the Macedonians, inhabiting regions both to the west and to the east. Upon crossing the Hellespont and settling in Asia Minor, they became known as Phrygis or Phrygis in ancient Greek, hence the modern term Phrygians. According to Herodotus, some of them migrated further east and became the Armenians. However, according to the renowned geographer Strabo, the Brigus were part of the Thracian tribes that migrated to Anatolia. Additionally, he suggested that several other Anatolian peoples, such as the Mysians and the Bithynians, shared Thracian origins. The historian Arrian also seems to agree with this. Most Greek scholars believe that this migration occurred several decades following the Trojan War, which is commonly dated to around 1200 BC. While the exact origin and time frame remain uncertain, the majority of archaeologists endorse the idea of a European origin for the Phrygians. This is because the cultural landscape undergoes significant changes following the Bronze Age collapse, resembling a broader cultural influence found in southeastern Europe and northwestern Anatolia. This stands in contrast to the earlier culture, which was influenced by the Hittites in eastern Anatolia in general. The evidence lies in the pottery, architecture, settlement planning, and burial practices. Additionally, as we will delve into later, most linguists agree today that the Phrygian language bears the closest resemblance to ancient Greek, suggesting a close proximity between the two cultures that goes back to the Bronze Age. It remains uncertain whether the Phrygians arrived through a sudden migration or a series of successful waves, and whether they completely displaced the previous inhabitants or assimilated them. What is known is that during the early Iron Age, around the 11th century BC, a new culture emerged that would later evolve into the Phrygian civilization. Currently, archaeological evidence for the Phrygians during the initial period of their history, spanning from the 12th to the 11th century BC, is scarce. Nevertheless, the Assyrians, who were the dominant force in the region during that era, have left behind literary records in the form of cuneiform tablets and cylinders. The Assyrians referred to a people known as the Mushki, identified by most historians as the Phrygians. It appears that during this era, the Mushki were paying tribute to the Assyrians. During the reign of the Assyrian king Tiglath-Pileser I, a tablet records that the five kings of the Mushki assembled an army of 20,000 men and launched an attack against the Assyrians. However, they suffered a resounding defeat. This seems to indicate that the Phrygians were not unified under a single kingdom yet, but were rather a patchwork of city-states with their own kings. Despite this, they managed to assemble a great army and launch an attack on their powerful neighboring state. During the early Iron Age, we transition to what historians and archaeologists recognize as Phrygian history proper. This period is primarily documented through archaeological findings from Gordion, the capital and central cultural hub of the Phrygian state. Phrygian history is divided into three periods: early, middle, and late Phrygian. The early Phrygian period begins in 950 BC and is marked by the replacement of wattle and daube houses on the Gordian Acropolis with great white stone structures, an open court, and a massive fortification system. Gordion was surrounded by vast, fertile lands and was strategically positioned near the Sangarius River, modern Sakarya, which provided access to water and clay. In these lands, the Phrygians cultivated wheat and barley while also raising sheep and goats. The Phrygian state operated much like a Bronze Age kingdom reminiscent of Mycenaean rule. It adopted a palace economy with the Phrygian king known as Vanakte, akin to the Mycenaean Vanax, reigning supreme. Below him likely stood a class of aristocrats. All wealth, food production, and manufactured goods, such as wool, textiles, and pottery, were overseen, traded, or distributed by the palace to the populace. It seems that the Phrygians were semi-independent and maintained a tenuous relationship with the Assyrians. Assyrian annals recount numerous instances where the Phrygians acted independently, refusing to pay tribute, which led to conflicts between the two powers. As the Phrygian kingdom expanded, Gordion would expand as well, encompassing additional territory. This expansion led to the development of a lower city surrounding the citadel and the construction of a fortification around it. Situated in the heart of Anatolia, the Phrygians occupied a strategic area along crucial trade routes. This location enabled them to accumulate wealth through trade with various neighboring powers, including the Assyrians, Lydians, Greeks, and the Neo-Hittite kingdoms. The Middle Phrygian period begins in 800 BC. Around 740 BC, the king known as Midas, or Mida as the Phrygians refer to him, ascended to the throne. His era marked Phrygia's peak of wealth and power, accompanied by significant territorial expansion. However, Phrygia still remained partly under the influence of the Assyrians. There are various Greek legends regarding Midas' ascension to the throne. According to the most famous tale, Gordias, a humble farmer among the ancient Phrygians, encountered a divine omen when an eagle landed on his ox yoke while plowing. Seeking guidance from soothsayers in Telmisos, the capital of Lycia, he was advised by a prophetic maiden to offer a sacrifice to Zeus. Following her instructions, he performed the sacrifice and later married her, resulting in the birth of their son, Midas. When civil discord plagued the Phrygians, an oracle foretold that a king arriving via a wagon would bring an end to their strife. As Midas arrived upon the wagon, the Phrygians appointed him king, leading Midas to dedicate the wagon as an offering to Zeus, and him renaming the Phrygian capital from its previous unknown name to Gordion after his father. According to the historian Arrian, it was at that time that the famous prophecy was revealed. Whosoever could loosen the cord with which the yoke of the wagon was tied was destined to be the ruler of all Asia. The cord was made of cornel bark, and neither end nor beginning to it could be seen. It remains uncertain whether this tale refers to the Midas who ruled during this period, or to an earlier Midas. Furthermore, it's unclear whether the historical Midas ascended to the throne with the help of a Phrygian oracle's decree, or was simply born into the royal family. Nevertheless, King Midas's existence is proven by contemporary Phrygian inscriptions and Assyrian clay tablets. Additionally, Herodotus provides further evidence recounting that Midas was the first non-Greek to present offerings to the Oracle of Delphi. His gift was his royal throne, parts of which have been discovered in the archaeological site of Delphi. During the reign of Sargon II, a contemporary of King Midas, several Assyrian annals are documented. These frequently mention the Mushki, including their king, Midas, referred to by the Assyrians as Mita. According to these accounts, in the late 8th century BC, the Phrygians consistently refused to pay tribute to the Assyrians and attempted to incite revolts and armed conflicts in neighboring states. However, the rebellious armies were defeated, and at the command of the Assyrians, the Cilicians raided the Phrygian lands and cities. Consequently, Midas was compelled to pay tribute to the Assyrians. In the early 7th century BC, the Cimmerians, a nomadic people, invaded Anatolia, wreaking havoc across the region. They raided parts of Assyria, Urartu, Phrygia, Paphlagonia, and Lydia. Despite the widespread devastation caused by the Cimmerians, Gordian managed to withstand the invasion. Certain ancient Greek scholars claim that Midas, in response to the conquest of Gordian by the Cimmerians, poisoned himself with bull's blood, a motif prevalent in Greek legend and historiography, despite the fact that bull's blood is not inherently lethal. However, as we mentioned, Gordian, along with other Phrygian cities, remained unscathed, as evidenced by archaeological findings. Thus, this claim is almost surely baseless. Nevertheless, after all this chaos of revolts and invasions, Phrygia was ultimately weakened. The 7th century brought about significant turmoil and power vacuums in Anatolia. Following the Cimmerian invasion, the Scythians initiated raids in the region, while new empires emerged in the south, such as Media and Babylon, which gradually overpowered the Assyrians. By the mid-7th century BC, the Lydians had amassed considerable wealth and power, leading to the subjugation of Phrygia under their rule. This marked the collapse of Phrygia's independent kingdom. Rather than facing execution, the Phrygian royal family assumed roles as governors under Lydian dominion. Subsequently, the Midians and Babylonians captured and sacked Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire, in 612 BC, effectively ending Assyrian rule. During the mid-6th century BC, Cyrus the Great, leading the newly formed Persian Achaemenid Empire, launched a great campaign of conquest. Around 550 BC, he invaded Anatolia and subjugated its various kingdoms. Gordian was among the last cities to fall, succumbing after a fierce and brutal siege that led to the destruction of its walls, marking Phrygia's submission to Persian rule. Despite the brutal siege, Gordian remained inhabited and flourished as a significant district center. This was partly due to its proximity to the royal road of the Persian Empire, a 2,400-kilometer route stretching from Susa to Sardis with 110 relay posts. The royal road facilitated efficient communication and trade throughout the empire. Although little is known about Phrygian affairs during this period, historical records indicate their participation in the armies of Darius and Xerxes during the invasion of Western Greece, as documented by Herodotus. Despite centuries of foreign rule, Phrygian culture endured, incorporating Persian influences over time. The Persian rule over Phrygia came to an end with the arrival of Alexander the Great. Most of Phrygia, including Gordian, surrendered to Alexander without a fight in 334 BC. It was during that time, as recounted by the historian Arrian, that Alexander heard about the prophecy of the Gordian knot, that whoever untied it would become the ruler of all Asia. Alexander attempted to untie the knot, but he was unable to do it, so he simply drew his sword and cut it, an action that came to symbolize his conquest. Following these events, Gordion became a military base for Alexander's army due to its strategic location. Subsequently, Alexander continued his conquests, extending his empire as far as western India. However, Alexander's untimely death at the age of 32 led to the division of his empire among his generals following the War of the Diadochi. Consequently, Phrygia experienced numerous changes in ownership among the Greek kingdoms, primarily falling under the control of the Seleucid Empire. Greeks were encouraged to settle in the region, initiating a process of Hellenization throughout Phrygia and most of Asia Minor. This cultural shift is evident in the presence of both Greek and Phrygian inscriptions, the worship of Greek deities, and a transformation in architectural styles and pottery. However, elements of pre-Greek Phrygian culture were still present during that time. In the early 3rd century BC, a large group of Celtic tribes launched an invasion of the Greek states in the west, sacking and looting numerous cities. However, they were eventually defeated, and soon after, they crossed the Hellespont into the kingdom of Bithynia. Some of them served as mercenaries, while others raided the coastal cities of Asia Minor. Ultimately, they settled in northern Phrygia and became known as Galatians. This region became a melting pot of Greek, Celtic, and Phrygian cultures, evident in religious practices, pottery styles, architecture, and inscriptions. In later times, during the Roman-Seleucid War in 191 BC, the Seleucid army, following their defeat by the Romans at Thermopylae, retreated to Asia Minor. However, the Romans continued their advance, joining forces with the Greek kingdom of Pergamon to confront the Seleucids. During the Galatian War in 186 BC, a coalition of Romans and Pergamians launched an assault on the Galatians and the city of Gordion was abandoned. Its inhabitants fled to the nearby mountains, seeking refuge and attempting to assemble an army. Subsequently, the Romans launched an attack, decimating their forces and annihilating their camp. Thousands were captured and sold into slavery, thus Gordion was deserted. The Romans eventually conquered the region around 70 BC. As a result of Hellenization and later Romanization of the region, the inhabitants of Phrygia adopted a Greco-Roman identity. Despite this, remnants of the Phrygian language endured until the 3rd century AD. Phrygian is a fragmentary and partially attested language that belongs to the Indo-European language family. Phrygian inscriptions have been found in various locations across Anatolia, with a great concentration in the city of Gordion and its surroundings. The earliest of these date back to the 9th century BC. Notably, the Phrygians adopted the Greek alphabet, specifically the Eastern variant, prevalent among Anatolian Greeks, incorporating certain Phrygian modifications over time. Approximately 395 Phrygian inscriptions dating from around 900 to 330 BC have been discovered. These were carved on altars, shrines, tombs, monuments, and tableware. After this period, there is a 3-century gap with only one surviving inscription. Subsequently, Phrygian resurfaces from the 1st century to the 3rd century AD with 117 inscriptions dating from that period. Linguists have engaged in debate over the classification of the Phrygian language. While earlier scholars suggested a closer affinity to Armenian and Thracian languages, most contemporary linguists have identified a stronger link with ancient Greek, with some proposing a common Greco-Phrygian ancestor language. This observation was noted by the ancient Greeks themselves, who regarded Phrygian as the language closest to their own. In his book, The Phrygian Language, the scholar Obrador Korsak identified 30 key features shared between Phrygian and ancient Greek, encompassing vocabulary, morphological features, and phonetic traits. The site of Gordion was first excavated in 1900 by two German brothers, Gustav and Alfred Korte. 50 years later, renewed excavation efforts were initiated by the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology under the leadership of Rodney Young. Following a succession of excavation campaigns, Professor Charles Brian Rose and his team have been overseeing the site's excavation since 2006. The discoveries at Gordian are extremely fascinating and greatly aid in understanding Phrygian history and culture. Just like Phrygian history, the history of Gordian is divided into three phases: the early, middle, and late periods. Atop the Acropolis of Gordian, archaeologists excavated a great citadel gate dating back to approximately age 50 BC. It was made from stone and mud brick and was originally 16 meters high, a remarkable scale. In the southern part of the citadel, they excavated another gate constructed during that time. Stone rubble was utilized to fortify the gate, and massive wooden beams reinforced its stability. Completely encircling the citadel was a stepped terrace wall approximately 10 meters tall. It was constructed during the Middle Phrygian period in the 8th century BC and was adorned with red colors. Within the gates were great stone buildings known as megarons. This type of structure was found primarily in Mycenaean and Archaic Greece. It consisted of a great hall with a hearth and an adjoining anteroom used for various purposes. Some of the Gordian megarons were particularly large, measuring 19 meters in length, 15 meters in width, and 12 meters in height. One of these featured an inner court, which suggests that it may have served as the residence or ceremonial hall of the Phrygian king. Some of the megarons featured elaborate pebble mosaic floors adorned with geometric motifs, which remain partly preserved to this day. Additionally, large textiles adorned the walls. Other structures within the citadel were situated in the terrace building district, which served as the center for cooking activities and textile production. Around 800 BC, a great fire broke out, most likely due to a cooking accident rather than external attacks, completely ravaging the central building complex of the citadel. The Gordians immediately got to work, carrying and stacking great amounts of mud and dirt in the Acropolis, covering the burned buildings and raising the mound by 6 meters. There, they built their new palace complex at an elevated level, thus enhancing the imposing presence of the citadel. Additionally, archaeological findings have confirmed the presence of a lower town enveloping the citadel. This town had its own walls and was reinforced by two forts along its perimeter. Furthermore, remnants of an outer town on the western side of the settlement have been found, complete with its own walls and fort. Defensive ditches were also observed around various sections of these walls. Together, these two towns, along with the palace atop the citadel, formed the extensive city of Gordian, covering an area of around 100 hectares, 1 square kilometer. Spread across the valley surrounding the city of Gordian are approximately 150 tumuli. Notably, this represents the earliest examples of burial mounds to be constructed in Anatolia. The earliest of these tombs date back to around 850 BC, while the most recent were built during the Roman period. Interestingly, some of these were aligned with the citadel and its gates. For instance, when one exited through the first gate, they were greeted with a clear view of the earliest royal mound. The largest of these tombs is known today as the Midas Mound. However, it was probably constructed by Midas for his father, Gordius. Dating back to around 740 BC, this mound stands at an impressive height of 53 meters. At the central base of the mound lies the tomb chamber, which is the oldest surviving standing wooden structure in the world. The chamber housed the remains of the king, which was surrounded by numerous valuable artifacts. Among these treasures was an intricately crafted lion-headed rhyton or wine citula, probably originating from Assyria. Additionally, archaeologists found a large bronze bowl adorned with depictions of sirens and bearded figures, along with a finely crafted wooden inlaid table and two serving stands. The findings also included various bronze bowls, jugs, and fibulae. Some of these vessels were likely used during the funeral feast that occurred after the burial of the king. The Phrygians worshipped as the main deity, the mother goddess, whom they called Mater, or Mater Kubileia, the mother of the mountains. The worship of Mater is attested by a great number of altars, shrines, statues, and figurines. In these representations, she is often depicted as the mistress of animals, flanked by two felines, or accompanied by a predatory bird. Sometimes she is also depicted with children by her side. Mater was the patron goddess of the Phrygians, embodying a great number of aspects. She was revered as the goddess of mountains, fertility, motherhood, wild animals, city walls, the underworld, the wilderness, and divination. Additionally, she was viewed as a mediator bridging the realms of the natural and the supernatural. Her worship appears to trace back to Neolithic times in some way or form, as evidenced by a figurine discovered in Çatalhöyük dating back to 6000 BC. The figurine depicts a seated fertility goddess flanked by two felines, suggesting the early veneration of a similar deity. Thousands of years later, when the Hittites and Luwians established themselves in Anatolia, the cult of this goddess was integrated into their culture, alongside their own pantheon of gods. The Phrygians likely blended elements from their earlier European beliefs with the worship of Mater. During that time, Mater was not only revered by the Phrygians, but also by people from the Troad in the west, as well as the Lydians and Lycians. In Phrygia, the priests of Mater were eunuchs. They later became known in the Greek and Roman world as Galli. Due to her perceived wild nature, the Phrygians worshipped their goddess through frenzied rituals, ecstatic dances, and bull sacrifices. Mountains across Asia Minor were revered as sacred sites devoted to the worship of Mater. These included Mount Ida, situated between Phrygia and the Troad, Mount Paean in Ephesus, and Mount Dindymon. East of Mount Dindymon was a city, later known as Pessinus, where a rock, said to have fallen from the sky, was worshipped in her honour. This city remained semi-independent and was respected as a religious centre up until the Middle Hellenistic period. At Mount Dindymon, Mater was worshipped under the name Adistus. According to Greek mythology, this deity was said to have been born when the seed of Zeus fell upon the earth. Adistus possessed both male and female parts. The gods would later remove Adistus's male parts, thus transforming her into a goddess. In addition to the worship of Mater in the sacred mountains, the Phrygians constructed numerous altars and shrines across the hills and plains. These include great rock-cut facades adorned with geometric motifs and images of the goddess flanked with two lions on either side, as well as altars featuring carved steps leading to rock-cut idols, doorways, or inscriptions. These stepped altars were occasionally located near great rock-cut tombs. The worship of Mater spread to the Greek world, initially embraced by the Anatolian Greeks around the 6th century BC. Subsequently, it extended to the Greek mainland and Magna Graecia in southern Italy. In these regions, the goddess came to be known as Cybele or Cybele in ancient Greek, derived from the Phrygian term Mater Kubileia, Mother of the Mountains. In the Greek world, Cybele assumed many different forms and her worship practices varied accordingly. She was often associated with different goddesses depending on the region, such as Artemis, Hecate, Demeter, Aphrodite, and Rhea, the mother of Zeus. The Greeks built numerous temples known as metron, dedicated to the Mater Theon, the mother of the gods, and these were devoted to Rhea, Demeter, or Cybele. This versatility in deity associations is characteristic of ancient Greek religion, known for its many myths that often diverged or contradicted one another, depending on regional beliefs and cult practices. In the Greek world, the priesthood persisted in a similar fashion to Phrygia, featuring eunuch priests referred to as Galli. However, the rituals of frenzy and wild dances were not so prevalent, as the Dionysian rituals, which involved similar practices, were already firmly established and highly popular in the Greek world. In the 3rd century BC, another deity known as Attis was introduced to her cult. I use the term introduced because it is unclear if Attis was originally part of the Phrygian goddesses' worship. Attis was a unique male deity and was worshipped as Cybele's consort or servant, depending on the origin myths believed by each cult. He is frequently portrayed wearing the famous Phrygian cap. In the Hellenistic period, the Phrygians worshipped the Greek gods alongside Mater or Cybele. However, their statues, altars, and rituals gradually took on Greek features. According to Roman tradition, the worship of Cybele was adopted in 240 BC by the state of Rome. This was during the Punic Wars, when Rome sought both divine protection and a morale boost. It was also a period marked by the rising popularity of the legend linking Rome's origins to Troy, a story that gained traction with the help of scholars like Quintus Fabius Pictor. As we mentioned, Mount Ida, located on the border between Phrygia and the Troad, was one of Cybele's most sacred sites. According to the myth, it was at this mountain that Aphrodite and Anchises bore Aeneas, the legendary ancestor of Rome. This connection between Cybele and the birthplace of Aeneas led the Romans to embrace the worship of the goddess, whom they called Cybele or Magna Mater, the Great Mother. The Romans sent an embassy with warships to the Greek kingdom of Pergamon, and they took the sacred rock from the city of Pessinus. Subsequently, they built a great temple on the Palatine Hill to house the revered rock. In Rome, the Galli were led by the Archigallus and a great priestess. Due to the Roman state's strong distaste of eunuchs, they wanted to prevent regular interaction between Roman citizens and the priests of Cybele. Thus, their rituals were restricted to the temples. The only exceptions were one or two annual processions held in the city. According to Roman scholars, once the Galli became eunuchs, they adopted feminine traits. This included wearing women's clothing, growing their hair long, adorning themselves with jewelry, and being referred to using female pronouns. Each year, 3 different festivals dedicated to Cybele were held within the temples. These were marked by intense rituals, including wild, frenzied dances to ecstatic music and ritualistic castrations. Another famous ceremony of the cult of Cybele was the Taurobolium, where a bull was sacrificed upon an altar. We cannot be certain how much the Roman and Greek worship of Cybele resembled the worship of Mater in Phrygia, but it seems that there were both similarities and differences between them. Mater was worshipped in some way or form as early as 6000 BC, and her methods of worship, as well as her names and roles, underwent significant changes over time. Apart from Cybele, the Phrygians themselves also feature in Greek myths and legends. In Homer's Iliad, Phrygia is portrayed as a powerful state allied with Troy. Homer composed the Iliad during the 8th century BC, combining Bronze Age tales with contemporary narratives. Hence, it's probable that he included Phrygia because it was a great kingdom in his time. Aside from the Iliad, there are the myths and legends of King Midas, the most famous Phrygian in history. There were various versions of the Midas myth in Greece, highlighting the king's extravagant wealth and his golden touch. In the Roman version, in the Phrygian countryside, the satyr god Silenus, mentor to Dionysus, lay in a drunken stupor. Discovered and brought before King Midas, he was treated for 10 days. On the 11th day, Midas returned Silenus to Dionysus, who granted Midas one wish. He famously wished that everything he touched would turn to gold. But after turning every single food in his palace to gold, he realized his error and begged Dionysus to reverse the spell. The god instructed him to cleanse himself in the river Pactolus, washing away the curse, an action to which the presence of alluvial gold in that stream is attributed. Although often overlooked or entirely unknown to many, Phrygian art is remarkably rich. One of its most prevalent forms is geometric art, as seen in the pebble mosaic floors of the Gordian Megarons, the intricate designs of altar facades, the painted roof tiles, and the wall textiles. A great example of geometric motif art is the Midas Monument, situated in the so-called Midas City in the Eskişehir province of Turkey. The Midas Monument is a remarkably well-preserved rock-cut facade dating back to the late 8th century BC, standing at a height of 17 meters. Some believe that it portrays the front of a temple, while others suggest it could represent the facade of a megaron. It likely served as a religious monument, given the inscriptions carved on the rock mentioning Mater, along with indications suggesting the presence of a statue of the goddess at its base. Furthermore, the inscriptions also include the name of Midas, which is why it is known today as the Midas Monument. In addition to geometric motifs, Phrygian art also featured human-like figures, as evident in both religious and secular artworks. A great example is found in the reconstructed wall of a Phrygian building depicting soldiers marching into battle alongside images of various animals such as felines, bulls and goats, and mythical creatures like griffins, sphinxes and centaurs. As we have seen, the Phrygians were fond of using bright colors in statues, wall paintings and buildings. Findings from the royal tombs of Gordian reveal that their clothing was also adorned with vibrant colors. What is interesting is that according to archaeologist Brian Rose, analysis on the shroud textile found in the burial mound of King Midas, along with similar textiles from other kings and queens, revealed that these fabrics were coated with an inorganic pigment called goethite. This pigment gives objects a golden appearance through a chemical process. Professor Rose believes that the inspiration behind the Greek legends of the golden touch, wherein everything the Phrygian king touched turned to gold, stems from the presence of this pigment. He suggests that to foreigners, the people of Gordian appeared to be dressed entirely in gold due to the use of goethite on their clothing. Further supporting this theory is the lack of actual golden objects found in Phrygia, even within the tombs of the kings. The legend of King Midas is very well known, but surviving Phrygian culture extends beyond that, particularly in music, through the Phrygian mode. However, the original Phrygian mode is not the same as its modern counterpart. What the ancient Greeks referred to as the Phrygian mode is actually what we now identify as the Dorian mode. This confusion occurs because medieval music theorists in Western Europe mixed up the names when they adopted the ancient Greek modes. Another aspect of Phrygian culture that still survives is the famous Phrygian cap, a soft hat with a cone-shaped top that curls forward. In ancient times, this type of cap was not only worn by Phrygians, but also by various Iranian groups like the Persians and the Medes. However, the ancient Greeks first encountered it through their interactions with the Phrygians, hence the name. As time went on, various other peoples, such as the Scythians, Thracians, and Dacians, were also depicted wearing the Phrygian cap in Greek and Roman art. In religious settings, the Phrygian cap was worn by Attis, the consort of Cybele, and also by Mithras of the Roman mystery cult. The Phrygian cap was a symbol of the exotic East, even in Christian art. In the early modern era, the Phrygian cap came to symbolize liberty. This connection arises from its similarity to the Peleus, an ancient Greek hat worn by freed slaves in Roman times, which was also associated with republicanism during the imperial period. The Phrygian cap featured prominently in the American and French Revolution, and later in South American uprisings. Even today, red Phrygian caps are on the seals and coats of arms of numerous countries across the American continent.